Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
I mean, do I need to cook for Air France? No. Right. But am I proud of our home airline?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. We are back on Special Sauce with one of my oldest chef and running partner friends, Daniel Boulou. We're going to talk about everyone's favorite topic to bitch about, airline food. We're going to talk about the pitfalls of chef empire building and the lessons he has imparted to many young chefs. So let's start with airline food because, as you may or may not know, I spent 7 years consulting for Northwest Airlines, put together a Northwest Airlines consulting chef's team with Nancy Silverton, Todd English, Nancy Oakes from San Francisco, Mark Peel when she was married, when Nancy was married.
Of course.
And Tom Douglas in Seattle.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was on an Air France trip. It was a press trip, the only press trip I've ever taken. And that's because you were doing the cooking.
I was the pilot.
Yeah, you were the pilot. And so you have developed some business class meals for Air France. Talk to us about the process because people don't understand just how many hurdles there are, challenges with airline food.
Of course. And I think I have done it once in the past with Lufthansa. I've never done it for American airline, any airline in America. But I know that it's challenging. But Air France, I go back 40 years ago. And I know that all the great chefs of France were already working for Air France and supporting the food program in the most creative way and the most, you know, possible way. And so Air France always had chefs associated with their trip from Paris to anywhere, but never had chefs associated with their trip in the return from, let's say, America to France.
Right.
And so they approached me and said, Daniel, would you join us and create a food program, a menu, or at least we just want you to do one dish in our offering, which comes from you. And so I knew about the challenges, and first I asked them about all the things we can
control,
control,
things you can't control.
And the things we can't control, and what is the most popular dishes, and what is the least popular dishes, and what are the most popular techniques to apply and the least popular technique, preparation. And based on that, we, of course, create a grid of direction and plans. And then after, we try to make a food who is recognizable, who is who has a sense of not hominess, but a sense of comfort, I would say. And it's kind of sophisticated comfort food, but hard to get too sophisticated. Because, you know, it's not a restaurant either. It's an imposed meal.
And you, look, I know that you are an obsessive perfectionist. And you're also a bit of a control freak.
A bit.
And so airline catering jobs are entry-level jobs. They're not for skilled cooks. There's usually someone with a hotel restaurant background.
Very much.
Heading up the kitchen. The food has to be cooked by these people who are not the most experienced cooks in the world and are not being supervised quite as carefully as they certainly would if they were working in your kitchen.
Right.
Then the meals have to be chilled, right?
Exactly.
And they have to board the plane at a certain maximum temperature, which is like 40 degrees. I forgot what it is.
Oh, yeah, a little bit more than that. But
And then they're reheated in airline ovens, which can often be off by 100 degrees. Because I've done my homework.
I know
this stuff. And
so challenging.
Right. And you have to depend on the flight attendants who have a million things to think about, that they're going to turn the ovens on, they're going to take out the food when they should. They're not going to be interrupted by some unforeseen circumstances. It's really hard.
It's hard. It's super hard. And also, especially on overnight flight where either the flight is too short or the flight is long, but people want to sleep. So you have to do a quick service and yet a good service. But the challenges I faced was, of course, first you have to ask the budget. You have to create a meal. And then after, understand the seasoning, what work well, what don't work well. Because in altitude, I think your palate change a little bit. And
sure,
the taste bud change. And then after, it's the composition of a dish. How they're going to cook it in mass production. You know, they don't have a copper pan and a little burner, and they do it just like home. So all that. And then after the chain of sort of step going, the dish will go through, such as cooking, pre-cooking, chilling, reheating. And you want the dish to smell good after it's reheated. You want the dish to be appetizing.
Right, not have that reheated smell.
Completely. And so it took a lot of tests. It took a lot of work. But I think they were very cooperative. And I think they have a very good team. And I really feel then, maybe that was a while ago when you worked with airline, but since then the catering world of airline has
gotten more sophisticated.
Very sophisticated, where now they have blast chiller, where something come from, you know, 200 degrees down to 35 degrees in no time. So
right. And they're probably using sous vide in some cases.
In some cases also.
Yeah.
And exactly, the slow cooking process. There's a lot of technology within the equipment who has helped elevate the quality of the meals and the safety of the meal also, because it's they have very high regulation for safety.
Absolutely.
As you know, you don't ever want contamination or anything in the meal.
Yeah.
And so I think it was a good process to understand very well that part in order to accomplish something very good.
And I had a very good meal. The plane, you were on the plane that I was on, and I had a very good braised lamb dish with some tasty jus, very simple, very. Mm-hmm.
So we had two suggestions of dishes. I made many dishes with beef and all that. One was a chicken tagine, it's a dish we do at Boulou Sud. It's a dish we do at Boulou Sud, and we have that on our menu there. And so it's a variation a little bit on the original recipe, but it has cauliflower, it has saffron, it has cumin, it has cinnamon, and the dish has a couscous with it and the vegetable, and it really is. You didn't know the original, I think you will find that dish very very good.
Yeah, and then
the lamb shank, same thing. It's something we serve in our bistro. At DB Bistro here in New York, or on occasion in the winter sometime or something. So the creation of recipe don't always come from Restaurant Daniel, the most sort of sophisticated restaurant, but something a little more bistro, a little more comfort food.
What was interesting, so when I had it, it was really good, like the lamb was tender. Mm-hmm. And then we ran into some friends who had taken the exact same flight and also had the lamb, mm-hmm. and they didn't have as favorable a reaction. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that, again, you're getting into so many variables that you can't control from flight to flight.
I know, it's true.
You could have the best intentions in the world and even the best ideas in the world, and there are so many ways for them to get screwed up.
And it's not easy because, I mean, do I need to cook for Air France? No.
Right.
But am I proud of our home airline?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think they are fantastic, but I know that it'll never be like my restaurant. It'll never be the cooking we can do at the restaurant. But if I can help in elevating a little bit their offering.
Even to get it 5% better.
Or more than that.
Right,
I would
even
say
20%
30
better.
To 40% better. it's already achieving accomplishment, mm-hmm. but it's more as a professional, I feel, and I enjoy the challenge, and I hope people appreciate the fact that I'm just trying to elevate the offering.
A quick shout out to one of our sponsors who brings you this message. HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities needed to eliminate food waste, and offers step-by-step recipes for delicious meals designed to take around 30 minutes to make, all of which are approved by 2 registered dietitians on staff. This summer, you can even expect lighter fare and breakfast options, with each meal coming out to just under $10. And everything is delivered in a special insulated box, always with free shipping. For $30 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code SeriousEats30 when you subscribe.
We are back on Special Sauce with Danielle Boulou. I want to talk to you because you wrote this great book that came out like 13 years ago called Letters to a Young Chef, which you said that you're in the process of updating and it's going to come out again. But I was so struck by, even though the book is now however many years old, how much of it still resonates. Mm-hmm. And so I actually wrote down all the chapters and just to get your sense of some of the chapters, you know, like you talk about the trinity of heat, which is
yes.
roasting, braising, and sautéing, and how that's young chefs have to master those things.
Very much.
And you talk about the grand tour, which you've already alluded to, which mm-hmm. is, and if you remember when Alex Lee was working for you, I took you on a grand tour of New York.
Yeah, no, you did. You took me to Harlem. You took me to the Bronx. You took me to Brooklyn.
And it was great. And I remember the final stop was this Ukrainian, Polish-Ukrainian butcher on First Avenue, Kirovitsky, which is now gone.
Yeah.
And you loved the ham so much, you brought it back for family meal.
Very much, very much. And you took me to the fried chicken place also in Harlem.
Yes.
At the chef who has one pan.
Oh, Charles.
Charles.
Yeah, Charles Gabriel.
Yeah, Charles Gabriel, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, there's a chapter on desire, drive, and mm-hmm. discipline, and mm-hmm. you embody all those things. And talk about those in relation to today's chefs.
Well, I see in many of the young chefs this sort of desire for this profession and desire for becoming a better chef, and they have good discipline. I mean, they spend money sometimes on education for it. When they go to a CIA school or ICE or any great school who really give them the startup. But then after this desire for this profession, you have to have it. You have to have the passion for hospitality, the passion for making people happy and trying to do it with a sort of respectful, intelligent way, because there's nothing worse than a chef who can't succeed or, you know, start his business but it don't really work. And I think the desire to become a great chef one day, for me, I wanted to be as good as my mentor, and that was very important. And of course, the second one is
the discipline.
Discipline. And discipline, it's important. But that's not mean that discipline require you run your kitchen like a boot camp. You know what I mean? Discipline is just teamwork. And
it's internally derived in some
absolutely.
Cases, right? It's both external and internal.
Very much. And I think for a good chef, you need both.
Yeah.
And
because you have been known to raise your voice in a restaurant
I have
kitchen.
No shyness at raising my voice. But you see, when I was a young chef, I think I made sure and struggled to keep up with everything. I think now I am much more supported and surrounded by young talent with me. And I think it's a different time. I feel more confident today than maybe I was then. I think I feel more supported. And it's important for me to also continue to transmit and to give responsibility to others.
Mm-hmm.
But this discipline, I think it's not a discipline with the most strictness of discipline. I mean, it's not the army either, but is the discipline to respect techniques, to respect recipe, to respect
tradition, craft,
and to respect the craft, absolutely, and this discipline to respect the people you work for, the people you cook for, the people who help you be who you are. I think it's very important to have a good understanding and a good discipline around that, and a discipline to and the respect to yourself and to you, you know, the way you present yourself as a chef.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interesting because this book, I think it's great that you're putting out a new edition of the book.
Yes.
Because I was thinking...
October 4th. 4th of October, I think the book will be coming
that's
out.
That's great. So yeah, that's really cool.
It's Letter to a Young Chef, Chapter 2, and there's going to be some new addition to it. And I wanted the voice of young chef I admire, mm-hmm. who are different generation than
right,
me.
Like Grant Achatz.
Exactly, Grant Achatz and Gavin Kaysen and Daniel Hum, and where they are bringing, they are the ones who are part of the incredible dimension cooking has taken mm-hmm. in America. Mm-hmm. And I am just part of the foundation of this evolution, and they are part of the frame also.
Yeah, no, it's
and
great.
I
it's
think
amazing.
It's good.
One of the things I know, and this is what I feel about Serious Eats, is I love the fact that at Serious Eats, so many talented people have taken flight mm-hmm. and gone on. I figured out that people have written 25 books, editors and writers at Serious Eats.
Yes.
Talk about that idea of paying it forward, because as you said, your kitchen has given birth to so
many great cooks,
pastry chefs, restaurateurs, and they all speak of you, not that you were the easiest boss, but they all speak of you with such reverence. Talk about that.
I'm someone who forgive people. So by forgiving people, I think I feel more comfortable with myself, and I feel more comfortable being associated with my industry as a whole. Mm-hmm. And when I say I forgive, is because, you know, of course, chef maybe might leave me and
right.
take
and
half
you,
of the brigade.
You're like me, and you felt bereft sometimes.
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Annoyed.
But life goes on. Let's
yes,
move on.
And by the way, that is your greatest gift to us as Serious Eaters, that all those chefs came through, mm-hmm. whether the departure was friendly or unfriendly, it doesn't matter, right? In the end, that is what you've paid forward, and it is a big part of your legacy.
Very much. And also, I could not keep them all anyway. So
right.
It's good once in a while that some have to leave.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I feel that way too. It's like people say, well, are you jealous of so-and-so? Are you kidding? It's like you have gotten every accolade
absolutely.
There is to get.
And I think I was blessed with the evolution of life and in this industry, and the being a witness of an incredible time in America, and being part of it, in a small way but in a meaningful way, and I think it's very important.
Well, I would disagree with you. I don't think it was such a small way, but you can say that. All right, now it's time for the special sauce, all you can answer buffet. I know you have to get going, but so who's at your last supper? No family allowed. Could be artists, could be cooks, it could be writers, could be dancers, musicians. I know you're a huge Howlin' Wolf fan.
Yes.
So you could have Howlin' Wolf there if you want.
I don't think I would have Howlin' Wolf because I don't know him personally well enough.
You don't have to know him personally. Remember, it could be living or dead, too.
But I would like to have artists.
Okay.
Artists who I've known in France and adore because they were in the south of France and important, like César or Follon. And they were friends of Roger Verger and... he loved them, but also artists in America. I mean, I love Chuck Close.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good friend. And also Vic Muniz.
Musicians?
Yes, of course. But Vic Muniz, who kind of immortalized me at the subway station of 72nd and 2nd Avenue there, where I have my portrait in marble on the wall.
Funny.
It's quite something, but he's also Brazilian and he's fantastic.
Right.
And musician, of course. I love the Killers and
you love the Killers, and Chuck Close and French artists. I love this
absolutely, and maybe Gérard Depardieu also because he's a bon vivant and he loves to eat and drink and a little crazy, but I happen to like him. And there's many other people. I mean, winemakers, of course.
Yeah.
I want to have very good winemakers. And, of course, I want Paul Bocuse to be there also.
All right. What are you eating?
We will be eating Lyonnaise cuisine, for sure.
So give me three courses of Lyonnaise cuisine.
Back to tradition. So yeah. We'll have maybe a soup à la jambe de bois, where it's basically the most incredible pot-au-feu, and it's basically boiled meat. The Italian have bolito misto. We have soup à la jambe de bois, where you have those big beef shanks crowning a platter of cuts of meat from pork to veal to chicken to beef. And
it's almost a pot-au-feu.
A pot-au-feu, but yeah. Majestic.
Yeah.
Pot-au-feu, there'll be a poulard, maybe a truffle chicken in a pig bladder, cooked in a pig bladder with a truffle sauce and a truffle rice. There'll be also, with that, I think a tête de veau, because I love calf heads and I like it when it's cooked whole, and then it's taken off the skull, and then you clean the fat and you add the tongue and the sweetbread and the cheeks inside, and then you roll it, you cool it, then you slice it thick and you roast it.
You're still a farm boy at heart, aren't
totally.
So what do you cook when there's not much in your house to work with? Like if you're tired and you come home, like what's your go-to super simple?
I'll split an avocado.
Okay.
I'll go for the anchovy can. I open the anchovy. I make a nice toast. I usually have always some pickles also at home, Japanese pickles, all kind of pickles. And I may have a fresh tomato. I'll fabricate myself a tartine of anchovy, avocado, tomato, pickles.
That sounds good, man.
A little bit of sliced onion, like a little, you know. That's... And then I finish with a little bit of chocolate.
I like it. It's just been declared Daniel Boulou Day all over the world. What happens? What is happening on your day?
It's that... Is that giving me the right to have a day off?
Yeah, and you can participate.
What happened on that day?
Yeah, what happens on that day?
I think I want the entire world to be cooking one of my dish. I'll give them a list of five they can choose from.
They can choose.
And dish will have really live quite a lifetime around me, such as, for example, in New York, I created the paupiette of sea bass at Le Cirque in 1986.
Right, with the potato crust.
And 30 years later, you can still have that dish at Café Boulou in New York. It's not at Daniel anymore, but it's at Café Boulou. Mm-hmm. And I think to me, to have, you know, as much as we want to keep changing and keep evolving, and we do, there's few dishes, and that's why at Café Boulou, I created a menu called La Tradition, because we can keep that dish there.
Right, and they're iconic.
Iconic.
And so you want everyone to stay home from work, get all the ingredients for of your dishes.
They need four ingredients for the black sea bass in crispy potatoes.
All right. And then they just hang out. And I know you. There should be blues music blasting, right?
Exactly. I sing some super blues and or some
Muddy
good,
Waters, maybe.
Right. Voilà, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. We can't wait for Letters to a Young Chef Volume 2 coming out in October. And I had no idea that was happening, and I just happened to read the old one before I got here. Anyway,
you're going to have new reading soon.
Exactly. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Daniel Boulou. And we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.